Hello, I'm Maurice Powell. Welcome to A Little Like Music, Manx Radio's regular Thursday evening classical music hour. I'm going to start with an overture by George Alexander McFarren. Now, his name cropped up, I think, for the first time in this series, last week or the week before, but I played, I think, a movement of one of his symphonies, because he has a rather strange connection with Douglas and the Isle of Man. In around 1836, he actually came here for less than a year to teach at one of the private educational establishments. Because he was a little bit hard up, some of his plans for writing operas in collaboration with his father in England came to nothing, and he suddenly realised that he was the sole sort of family breadwinner. So he got a job here teaching. It was about a year or just over a year. And he gave lots of concerts and one thing and another and wrote some music, none of which I think has actually survived. And then he went back to London, became a professor at the Royal Academy of Music, and eventually he became the principal of the Royal Academy of Music. He wrote symphonies and sacred music, and is quite an attractive composer, an almost exact contemporary of Sir Arthur Sullivan, but not nearly so well known, which is a pity. Now, one of the pieces of music that he was actually working on whilst he was here, although it was never performed here because there was never a big enough orchestra or a good enough orchestra at that time to perform a serious orchestral work, was an overture called Chevy Chase. And he used the old-fashioned spelling of Chase, C-H-A-C-E. Composed in 1836, exactly when he was here, it's based on a Scottish ballad about a young knight who finds that the two brothers of his beloved are implacably against him. It's like a lot of Scottish ballads. It's rather grim, really. Nevertheless, the overture that McFarren wrote turned out to be almost his signature piece. It was performed in London fairly soon after his return and remained one of his most popular pieces. So here we have George Alexander McFarren's overture, Chevy Chase. Thank you. Fine overture, that, a light Victorian overture, perhaps you might say. Beautifully orchestrated, full of energy by George Alexander McFarren. who became most notable as the principal of the Royal Academy of Music, but a very interesting and prolific composer as well. Unfortunately, the introduction I gave to this piece was a load of absolute twaddle, and I apologise for that. It is based on a Scottish ballad, but it has nothing whatsoever to do with knights and implacable brothers and sweethearts. That comes later in the programme. I can only apologise. I've not yet had my hot chocolate, and my brain ceases to function without it. So, that piece we just heard was based on a Scottish ballad. That bit was true. But the hunting motives all the way through should have reminded me a bit quicker. It's based on a popular ballad about a feud between the hunting rights between the Percy family and the Douglas family. This is not something that rings very loudly through the halls of history, but nevertheless, it provided a ballad which obviously McFarren was keen on, and it inspired him to write Chevy Chase. So I shall try and focus for the next 50 minutes or so, which is not difficult with this next piece. It's by Vivian Ellis. It's called Alpine Pastures. It's a really relaxing pastoral piece. Vivian Ellis is probably best known for a wonderful piece of train music called Coronation Scott. I used to hear it on the radio all the time. This particular music, it has more than a hint of the overture to William Tell about it, sort of the cor anglais opening, a very pastoral feel, shepherds calling across alpine meadows and all that. And although I don't remember, it was used as a cinema advertisement for Ovaltine for many years. Well, not many people know that. So, Vivian Ellis, Alpine Pastures. Alpine Pastures by Vivian Ellis. And now something a bit unusual. You may wish to take notes at this point. I mean, I might even get lost in the explanation for this piece, because I'm going to play what was originally an unfinished movement from a clarinet concerto by a composer who is only known to us because he completed an unfinished masterpiece by another famous composer. With me so far? Well, I'm nearly lost. The composer is Franz Xaver Zussmayr. No, doesn't ring any bells. I know what you mean. Zussmayr was the pupil and friend of Mozart whose job it was to complete Mozart's Requiem after Mozart's death in December 1791, which he did after some considerable time and with various other composers and friends having a go at finishing it as well. It's well known, of course, that Mozart did not finish his Requiem before he died, although he has sketched out substantial parts of it. The Requiem, of course, was a commission, and Mozart's wife was duty-bound to deliver a finished composition because she'd already been paid for it. So she asked some of Mozart's pupils if they would have a go, and two or three of them did but gave up, and then it fell to Zussmayr, who probably knew Mozart's intentions better than anybody, and he finished it using some of his own music, possibly some sketches that Mozart had left. Nobody's absolutely quite certain exactly how he accomplished that. So that's Zussmayr. He was quite a good composer, actually, in his own right, and was famous for his operas. The Mirror of Arcady is perhaps the best-known one, although there's never been a recording of it, and I've only ever heard bits of it in an arrangement for wind band. And it sounds quite interesting in a sort of a Mozart-y, magic flute-y sort of way. It'd be interesting to hear a full work by him. Nevertheless, where have we got to? Well, in Prague in 1791, Mozart and Stadler were there. Stadler, of course, being the famous clarinet player for whom Mozart wrote his clarinet concerto. And Zussmayr was there as well. And sometime during the time they were in Prague, Mozart suggested to Zussmayr that he write something for Stadler. You know, I've written two or three pieces for him. Why don't you write something for him? Now, Mozart died in December 1791, and Zussmayr began a clarinet concerto in 1792, but it was left unfinished. Now, it has been completed from sketches and other bits and pieces as well, and now exists as one movement, the opening movement of what presumably would have been a three-movement work. And it's very attractive. You will hear reminiscences of Mozart, of course, that's hardly surprising. But it's the only orchestral work, I believe, that's ever been recorded by Zussmayr. But it does give us a little idea of what he was like as a composer. So, I think that's probably about all. It's certainly enough anyway. So here, then, is the only surviving movement of a clarinet concerto by Franz Xaver Zussmayr, who famously finished Mozart's Requiem, and it's played for us by Thea King. Thank you. The first movement, the only surviving movement of an unfinished clarinet concerto by Franz Xaver Süssmayr, he who finished Mozart's Requiem after Mozart died in December 1791. And Süssmayr's unfinished concerto was completed by Michael Frayen. Now, the sharp-eared amongst you may have noticed that that clarinet seemed to have rather a lot of very low notes, which a normal clarinet doesn't have. And you'd be right. Süssmayr wrote this piece specially for Anton Stadler, Mozart's clarinetist, and Stadler had invented a new instrument called the basset clarinet. In other words, it was a clarinet with an extra bit of tubing added on to give it some extra low notes. And this is the work that this is the instrument that should be used when playing Mozart's clarinet quintet and Mozart's clarinet concerto. And modern recordings usually do adapt the published versions of these works, which are inaccurate, and interpolate these special pieces for the lower notes. So it makes it very interesting. Let's move on. Now, I make no apology for playing this piece. I've played it probably five or six times over the course of these series. I suppose it's not so often, really, five or six times in 7 or 8 years. But nevertheless, I try not to repeat things too often. I'm including this piece mainly because it's a very beautiful piece. In fact, it will be in my top 10 of most beautiful pieces of music ever written. It's the Crucifixus by Antonio Lotti. Lotti was a Venetian, an almost exact contemporary of Vivaldi, but not nearly so well known. Vivaldi, of course, had an international reputation, not only as a virtuoso violinist, but as a composer of operas. Lotti was associated mainly with St. Mark's in Venice, although he did move to Dresden midway through his career and write operas there for the fabulous court at Dresden. But he's not so well known. I do have a recording of one or two of his operas, and they're very fine. If you like operas of the Baroque type, Vivaldi, Handel, of course, then you'll simply love the work of Lotti. Very, very lyrical, warmly lyrical. This Crucifixus comes from a credo. In other words, it's one movement out of five. And it's just become amazingly popular, and it's hardly surprising. It's full of sort of heart-rending dissonances as Lotti gradually builds up the tension by piling dissonance upon dissonance. It's an absolutely incredible piece and lasts less than 4 minutes, so it's got everything, isn't it? This is the Crucifixus, then, of Antonio Lotti. The Crucifixus of Antonio Lotti, a wonderful contemporary of Vivaldi. In fact, did Vivaldi write a more beautiful sacred piece than that? And he wrote lots of wonderful sacred pieces. The words of the Crucifixus, of course, describe horrific events. And was there ever a more beautiful and tender musical accompaniment to those events? I think not. I think it was last week that I played a piece by the Scottish composer Hamish McCann. In fact, his most famous piece, The Land of the Mountain and the Flood, which some of us recall, was the theme music for a TV series called Sutherland's Law. Or was it repeated? It was actually quite good. Anyway, that's his most famous piece. And I said I'd try and look out and find some other pieces for you. And lo and behold, this week, there was a clatter at the letterbox. A little package came through from, I have no idea where, and inside was a disc of orchestral pieces by Hamish McCann. So I'm going to play you another piece by him this week. This is the Dowie Dens of Yarrow, and this is based on another Scottish ballad with the story that I mistakenly gave you for the opening piece of the programme. This is a very bleak Scottish ballad, a young knight, is hunted down, really, by the implacable hatred of the brothers of his sweetheart. Well, it doesn't really end well, does it? It's not a subtle piece, but it is powerful and it's tragic. And it gives us another view of Hamish McCann, who is beginning to emerge, certainly to my way of thinking, into a quite remarkable composer who is almost, but not quite, forgotten. So, The Dowie Dens of Yarrow by Hamish McCann.
Thank you.
Hamish McCann, the Dowie Dens of Yarrow. The knight, of course, in the Scottish ballad, he slays five of his enemies and hurts four of them, but is killed. And his beloved kisses him on the lips as he's dying and combs his hair, as she'd often done before. And there was grief in her heart in the Dowie Dens of Yarrow. Quite a tragic story. But a fine piece, Hamish McCann. I think we've just got time for a couple of short pieces. This is by John Field, not an English composer. He was Irish. He was a contemporary of Beethoven, and he's credited with inventing the nocturne, which, of course, was made much more popular by Chopin and others. This is an arrangement by Philip Lane of a nocturne by John Field for flute and small orchestra.
Thank you.
A delightful nocturne there by John Field, arranged for flute and small orchestra by Philip Lane. Well, that brings us to the end of the programme. We need something to play us out with, and I've chosen Punchinello by John Holiday. Please join me next Thursday at 9 for some more light music, and not so light music, perhaps. We'll see. So, goodbye.